For the first time in more than four decades, NASA is set to launch a space capsule tomorrow that has grander plans of human exploration into deep space. This time, the Orion spacecraft will be unmanned, but it is an important test flight and the first of many as NASA tries to chart a longer-term vision for human flight. Science correspondent Miles O'Brien has our report.
At a 50-year-old facility that tested the heat shields for NASA's Mercury and Apollo capsules, engineers are working on ways to protect a crew of astronauts returning to Earth from a voyage to Mars.
It's really a whole new ballgame in terms of the mission requirements and what we've done before.
So aerospace engineer Jeremy Vanderkam is working on the thermal protection system for NASA's Orion spacecraft, a capsule that has been described as Apollo on steroids.
So what we use is a material called AvCoat. It is actually a derivation of the same material used in the Apollo program for the Apollo heat shield. And so on the Orion heat shield, there's over 300,000 of these individual cells that are all filled by hand.
Vanderkam is using the venerable ArcJet facility at NASA's Ames Research Center to torch small samples of the heat shield with blistering hot gases moving at hypersonic speeds in a vacuum. It's as close to a real reentry from space as you can get on the ground.
So this is a 4-inch diameter puck, and the Orion capsule is 5 meters in diameter. So we obviously have some challenges in scale, and so we really rely at the end of the day on a flight test like EFT-1 to tell us how those parts of the system are going to work.
EFT-1, or Exploration Flight Test 1, will subject an uncrewed Orion capsule to a real-world trial by fire on its maiden voyage, giving Vanderkam the data he needs and NASA a big milestone. Bill Hill is a NASA Associate Administrator.
EFT-1 is absolutely the biggest thing that this agency is going to do this year.
Orion is slated to orbit the Earth twice, once at an altitude of about 500 miles, and then it will get a lift from a second stage booster to 3,600 miles, high enough for the capsule to be exposed to a big dose of space radiation and to create enough speed on reentry to generate 80% of the heat it would encounter on a return from the moon.
This is really our first step in our journey to Mars.
NASA envisions a human presence on Mars in the mid-2030s. Charlie Bolden is the agency's administrator.
I use the term pioneer instead of explore. Exploring implies we're going to go out and come back, like Lewis and Clark. We are intending to pioneer Mars, which means we are going to put people on that planet to be there permanently.
But NASA is a long way from that.
If you ask us to go to Mars today, we don't think we're in the right risk posture.
4, 3.
Bill Gerstenmaier is the man in charge of human space exploration at NASA. The current plan calls for an unpiloted Orion capsule to orbit the moon in 2018 and in 2021 or 2022 carry two astronauts on a short visit to a small asteroid or a piece of a larger one that would be robotically grabbed and nudged into lunar orbit. There are no firm plans for what happens after that. Engineers are dealing with some big technical hurdles: how to protect the crew from radiation, how to land something much bigger than a compact car-sized rover on Mars, and how humans can safely operate independent of support from Earth.
The basic strategy that we're trying to do is we do a series of tests, each one of more and more complexity and more challenge that we continue to add until eventually we build the capabilities and the skills and the operational techniques and the risk management philosophy that allows us to go to Mars.
There are many seasoned hands in the space world who wonder if the agency's big plans to visit the Red Planet may become lost in space. Tom Young is among them.
And I think the fundamental problem that we have with today's Mars strategy is that it's not consistent with the available budget, and we don't have the funds to really make it an executable plan.
Young is a veteran aerospace executive who knows a little something about getting to the Red Planet.
I'm assuming that we must be sitting right on the X. So that's the smooth area. So everybody just did fabulous and couldn't be more pleased. Thank you.
He was NASA's program manager for the Viking missions in the mid-1970s, which accomplished the first and second successful landings on Mars.
We've either got to augment the resources to make the goal achievable, or we've got to adjust the goal to be something that's consistent with the available resources, because if we don't, what we're fundamentally going to do is we're going to waste a lot of money.
Ignition and liftoff of Ares 1X.
In 2010, President Obama canceled the Bush administration's Constellation program, which envisioned a return to the moon.
I understand that some believe that we should attempt a return to the surface of the moon first, as previously planned. But I just have to say, pretty bluntly here, we've been there before.
Obama wanted NASA to use the money Constellation would have spent on a capsule and rocket made of Apollo and Shuttle Legacy hardware to push the development of new propulsion technology and seed the private sector to build new vehicles. But the cancellation of Constellation ruffled the feathers of some heavyweights in the aerospace world and on Capitol Hill. Senator Richard Shelby of Alabama represents NASA's primary rocket-building facility, Huntsville's Marshall Space Flight Center. He helped force the administration to spend less on new technology and instead design a rocket called the Space Launch System, or SLS. Led by Shelby's constituents in Huntsville, SLS is being built with beefed-up shuttle-style solid boosters and surplus shuttle main engines.
These were very successful engines, and we build on what we have. That's what we learn. And this is tomorrow's technology. We'll learn from this, and there will be other things that will come out of it that will be positive. But, you know, you just don't reinvent the wheel. You build on the wheel, and these were good wheels.
But as it is, SLS does not have enough thrust to go any farther than lunar orbit. That is what prompted the idea of bringing an asteroid to the moon. Otherwise, SLS is a rocket without a destination. For a mission to Mars, it will need a redesign with more powerful boosters and a new second-stage motor. Former NASA Deputy Administrator Lori Garver was one of the leading proponents of the original Obama space plan.
If you were driving to Mars in particular, there's a number of things you'd be doing that we're not doing now that are the difficult things. You wouldn't be building a spacecraft now based on technology from 40 years ago, engines from 40 years ago, to go somewhere in 20 years and spending $3 to $4 billion a year on it.
Garver believes NASA's current path to Mars is a hybrid of ideas, born not of engineering elegance, but rather political compromise.
The purpose has become political and jobs, and I think we've lost the sort of unifying view that exploration is something that we do as a species. We should have that broader purpose rather than just a political needs of a few members of Congress with jobs in their districts.
Senator Shelby rejects the notion that space exploration has become a jobs program.
Oh, I'd be against a jobs program. I'm for the cutting edge of space. Jobs come with it if you've got a good system that you're building, and I believe this will be a good system and be good for the space program. Otherwise, I wouldn't support it.
But will a half a loaf with a side of bacon ever get NASA to Mars? Is there enough money in NASA's budget to pay for the compromise and still reach the stars? John Holdren is President Obama's science advisor.
So I don't think the current budgets amount to kicking the can down the road. They amount to, within reasonable limits, getting done the steps that we need to achieve in order ultimately to get to Mars. Eventually, yes, between now and the 2030s, we would need to ramp up the budget. At the current budgets, we would not get to Mars. That's correct.
During Orion's first flight, NASA engineers aimed to test the riskiest events, things that have to work right the first time when astronauts are on board. But the biggest risk to the overarching goal may have more to do with political science than rocket science. Miles O'Brien, the PBS NewsHour, Washington.
Online, we have a slideshow of Orion's journey to the launch pad, and you can watch the launch live tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Eastern on our homepage.